an FA Cup 2020-21 FA Cup special out of Relatively Football.
We've gone back, you know, in time.
Two siblings and some football. Yeah, as you can see, we're pumped. It's Wednesday, the 29th of September, in the year of our Stan, 2021. And yeah, we're playing last year's FA Cup this year because we've got nothing else better to do, and that means...
Why the hell not?
All sorts of quirky rules. I'm Theo Lloyd-Hughes, and I'm here with my sister Flo. We're already off to a bit of a banterous start. Flo, I'll start by asking, how you doing?
I'm all right, I'm fine.
You got your WNBA hoodie on.
I've got my WNBA hoodie on, and before we even got started recording... I was already complaining about how I've got used to the luxury of watching games IRL on Sky Sports or on BBC, and I forgot about single camera FA player vibes and just how difficult it is to watch a game. Like, you can't rewind, so you have to be... There's no replays, so you have to be so glued to the screen 24/7. You can't really be looking at your phone, looking at Twitter. You can't really get that full sort of footy watching experience. Like, I like to WhatsApp people while I watch a game. Can't do that, you miss a goal, and then you're stuck. And could barely see the numbers on the backs of players' shirts. Yeah, so that is my complaint / banter of the opening intro.
I agree with everything you said, and, you know, potato cameras, Furts, there's a whole culture around the terrible broadcasting. Yeah, it's an in joke.
Okay. Is it like farts?
Furts.
Is it like a...
It's like farts, okay. But people in the WOSO community can explain it to you better than I.
I'll wait for Soph Lawson to tweet me the answer to that.
Yeah,
one.
There'll be like a whole explainer thread after this episode broadcast. Anyway, the point being that, look, it's terrible, it's unacceptable.
No, it's not. It's not unacceptable. That's too far. It's just, you know, I enjoy high quality broadcasts, and I forgot what a low quality broadcast is like.
I have this moment, and I was actually camping last weekend, and I think I was texting you and other members of my family, etc. I had one of these moments where I was sort of like sitting in the middle of the wilderness, texting across the planet, and I was like, wow, I can't believe I get to do this. So my answer to that is, it's pretty cool, we can just stream all the games for free on FA
Player. Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. I don't want to take that for granted.
I wish it could be better as well, but part of me is also like, I can't believe we get to do this in 2021.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we get to the games?
Let's get to the games.
More chat? So yeah, a bit of a funny night. I guess no upsets, Flo, if you probably agree with that. We kind of thought maybe there could be some upsets. Spurs were playing well. Chelsea were away from home. Brighton were playing a very good Charlton side coming off their first loss of the season. Brighton, that is. So maybe we thought there was going to be some upsets coming into this quarterfinal night. But alas, none tonight. City get a great win in the early game. 6-0 over Leicester. Another game maybe we thought Leicester coming in against a beat-up City side could have a chance. They don't get it done. Brighton in the other early game, Edge won 1-0 over Charlton. Very, very close game. That we'll get into that in a minute. Chelsea get a 3-0 win away to Birmingham in the late game. And maybe the game most people would have been watching. It was great to see it on ESPN in the United States with optional Spanish commentary, multi-camera. You would have loved it, Flo. Yeah, 5-1 there, Arsenal beat Spurs. Coming back from 1-0 down, early Rachel Williams goal, getting a lot of people hot and sweaty. And then Tobin Heath got her first start, very good, in an Arsenal shirt. Flo, where do you want to start with these four quarterfinals?
Should we start with Northland Derby?
Yeah, let's get to it. So yeah, it was a great start for Spurs. Rachel Williams scored a fantastic goal. Oh, have you seen it, Flo?
I saw a little clip on Twitter, yeah, because we split these games. So you were doing North London Derby and the Brighton game because I want you to be able to watch your Coy Visto Carps.
She did. She did make an appearance.
And then I was doing Birmingham Chelsea and City Leicester. So, yeah, tell me about North London Derby because I did see that Spurs went 1-0 up and I was like, well, because I thought before this game, this was definitely the best chance that Spurs had probably ever to beat Arsenal for the first time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was very easy to get carried away. It was 3 minutes in. The brilliant Asmita Ayle kind of switches the play. then Ashley Neville's full back to full. Ashley Neville gets on, tries to put some pressure on Lotte Wobbenmoy, I think, or maybe it was Anna Patton, who doesn't clear the ball. And there's Rachel Williams to jump on the second ball, win the 50-50 and smash it home first time. And I think, you know, we've seen Spurs, I think in the Cup last year, they had a few games, even that game against Chelsea in the league. You know, they can sometimes start early, look good, look feisty, look up for it, kind of, especially in the final third. And then, you know, the last half an hour of games, we often see Spurs maybe tire, maybe not take their chances, not look so bullish and courageous. But this was a game where, again, they looked up for it. And I think part of you was like, oh, you know, can Spurs, have they scored too early? Can they keep this up? And part of you thought, oh, well, maybe, you know, if they upset Arsenal's rhythm, Arsenal, who've looked really, really good and really direct, maybe Arsenal, who will come out of their shell playing three at the back, maybe there'll be more holes for Spurs to score more goals. But to be honest, apart from a Chioma Ubagagu chance in the second half, which was really well saved by Lydia Williams, it really didn't feel like Spurs created enough. And I think that's also a credit to how much pressure Arsenal put on their back four and on their centre mids. Josie Green had a really tough night tonight, terrible in possession. I think Spurs will be most annoyed by how poor they were when they got the ball and they just turned it over. And it's a credit to Arsenal, who right now just looks so ruthless, so 60 miles per hour. And being able to have Caitlin Ford, Nikita Paris, Tobin Heath, all these attacking players who I think play with a bit between their teeth, play with a bit of aggression, almost like heavy metal footballers, I think it makes it really hard to play against. And then obviously behind them you have Mane Iwabuchi, who's a little bit more placid, a little bit more careful, and she was fantastic tonight. I think that first goal after 15 minutes, and it had a little bit of luck. Esmeet Ayl gets a good block on Heath's cross, it bounces the right way, Josie Green tries to put in a slide, Mane Iwabuchi ends up kind of nutmegging her, you know. Little things went Arsenal's way, but then they had the quality to finish it off. And Nikita Paris today, once she got going, was just phenomenal. So that window of opportunity for Spurs was very small, and they weren't really good enough to take the most of it. But to be honest, the credit was with Arsenal. I think that three at the back's really, really working well. The way they can go from defence to attack in three passes or four passes, they play 20-yard, 30-yard passes better than anyone in the league. And it's really phenomenal. And I think for a cup game, you know, we joke about the silliness of playing last year's competition this year, but for the FA Cup, for Edouard to play such a strong 11, I think it was, and then for them to be able to bring on Kim Little and Beth Mead, I mean, it was a night, if you were already high on drugs and getting high on Edouard as an Arsenal fan, I think this game would have taken you to the next step.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's pretty bold for him to take a few risks with some of the starting lineup. And by risks, I mean injury risks, because we all know the problems that are happening at Man City at the moment. And in their win tonight, they had a few players that went down. Lasada did get subbed off in the end, but looked in not too bad a shape. Shaw managed to play on, and she got a hat-trick. But that is a bit of a risk, because really, given their history, given the differences in Arsenal and Spurs, like, they probably still would have won that game resting a few players. Obviously, last season there was that group stage Conti Cup win, wasn't there? That remember when Alex Morgan scored the winning pen against Arsenal, and they technically won, but like, obviously didn't win that game. But history tells us that Arsenal could probably have still won that game with a second best 11 out, and I think Jonas Adevoll is so keen on momentum, and he realises how important that momentum is going to be to them. It's just going to be really interesting how they manage this going forward with Champions League group games just around the corner, two FA Cups now that they're still in, the league as well, and the players going into international duty in just a few weeks again. It's going to be really, really interesting how they balance that squad. I mean, they've got so much depth, so they can afford, in a way, you know, if they lose a few players, it's not the end of the world. But at the same time, it's very obvious that he wants to keep this group together where he can. I think it's great to see Lotte Wobbenmoy and Anna Patton starting tonight, because I think that's their first start of
great.
The season.
They were really, really good.
And
I
think it's going to be crucial that when you're throwing players in because of injuries, because we know that Jen Beattie has struggled to keep fit for a whole season in recent years. Leah Williamson had some time out last season. I think it's really important that you don't just throw these players in the deep end when you need them, and when, you know, an injury crisis calls on them. I think it's really important that you blood them early, and so that they play together, they're ready to come on when you need them. And, you know, even if it's going to be a Champions League group game or whatever, it works. So, yeah, I mean, it was just pretty ruthless from Arsenal, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and I think what's great about what you're talking about momentum is that momentum can come in the big picture, you know, putting wins together, putting goals together. But I think in the smaller picture, when you think about the patterns of play, you think about the types of players they have, kind of similar players getting replaced by similar players, and it keeps the pressure on, it keeps the competitive nature on. You obviously didn't have to use Viv Miedema tonight. I think you've got a lot of people who get this system and they're buying in and they're able to kind of keep the flow going. And goals, two goals from set pieces tonight as well, which I think is huge, because I think that's an area where maybe Spurs would have fancied being able to do damage, and Arsenal were able to not just only play on the counter-attack in transition or from defence to attack, but they were able to beat them in these situations where you think maybe Spurs can get organised. And I think, yeah, it'll be a tough night for Spurs, I think, in the middle of the pitch, especially defensively and in the centre mid positions. I think Ryan Skinner will be really disappointed. And I think for Ezmita El and Ashley Neville, you know, you just had a tough night against two of the best wingers in the league.
Yeah, and I also think there's something to be said with the comfort of having a start to the season like Spurs have had, because especially when I saw them on Sunday, and obviously Theo and I don't really have time to get into the weekend's games as well, because we're trying to want to do like a WSL.
Yeah, we're kind of moving on.
But it's almost stupid because some of the teams have played again since, so it doesn't quite make sense to go back in time. But what I would say is with the start of the season that Spurs have had, there's a confidence, in a great way, a confidence that you get, and you start to want to play a certain way. And then when you play the better sides, and obviously they beat Man City, but it was kind of a fluky, you know, crazy scenario. But when you play the better side, you take more risks and you get yourself into trouble. And that's obviously, you know, some of the issue that happened tonight against Arsenal is you like on Sunday against Reading, you know, they were passing it around really nicely. There was a movement and a rhythm to Spurs that I really hadn't felt like I'd seen before. And obviously you try and do that against the teams that are going to press you, are going to put you under pressure, and that unravels quite quickly. And it's just interesting to see how that works against the tougher teams, is it can just unravel quite quickly.
Yeah, and just on obviously not doing a show last weekend, Flo and I get very busy. I know you respect that. I know you love that, listener. And sometimes that's going to happen. Sometimes we're not going to put a show together. You've got the brilliant box-to-box WSL out there to catch up on some of the games. Really want to give a shout out to Mariam of Frank Kirby Fight Club, who did a show by herself this week.
Wow, that's niche. I love that.
Yeah, the brilliant Andre Carlisle is taking holiday and gone to Peru, apparently.
Wow,
and
jealous.
Is offline, getting some zen, getting, you know, seeing the sights. We'd love to see it. Everyone needs a break. Don't get on journalists' back if they're not there, listener. We're all human. And so, yeah, there's brilliant people out there doing great work. Go find their podcast. Go find their writing. If Flo and I don't make it, we don't make it.
Yeah, I wasn't going to drag you out of your camping trip, drag you out of your tent and say, we've got to do a pod now about Spurs Reading.
I was actually camping the night before, and then I was in Louisville the
next
day.
Of course you were freeing Gemma Bonner. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Gemma Bonner did not look super free, and Ebony Salmon had a tough game as well. I mean, they looked happy, but I have to admit the vibes at Louisville, maybe this is for a different podcast, but I was expecting much better vibes, and that club I think is about to get a total reboot.
Well, they fully sacked their coach, didn't they? So the vibes can't be great.
I think between sacking, well, obviously the manager probably being involved in some dirty work to which we are not disclosed about.
Allegedly, we don't want to get sued.
Allegedly in some dirty work. And Nadia Nadim doing her ACL, you hate to see it.
Yeah, that was horrible.
And it feels like, I don't know, I was up in the press box and I won't reveal my sources, but there were some club people calling out some of the players for the way they were behaving there was some bad energy, let's just say, between club officials, Louisville players. And to be honest, I kind of feel like maybe the club officials are being a bit sensitive, because if you're losing and you're a professional athlete, you're pissed off. And so club players weren't really wanting to do club pieces of media, or they didn't want to go and talk to certain people or sponsors or something. And I was overhearing some gossipy stuff about
relatively
players,
gossip but. We'll be recording after this one. Let's get back to the FA Cup.
We've got to move on,
because Arsenal beat Spurs then in the end, and they will be playing Brighton in the semi-finals. So why don't we
perfect segue
head to the seaside?
I love this game. You know, I love this game. And I love this game not because Brighton played well. I love this game because Charlton had an absolutely fantastic go of it. And Jess King, great to see a, you know, long-term Charlton player. She had a really great game, hits the bar in the fifth minute, caused Brighton problems all day. I think it's a game that Danique Kirkdyke is going to want to burn the video tonight. Hope Powell and Kirkdyke will be lighting candles, rosemary,
sage.
You know, going hacking it. Hacking into the FA player and removing this video from the archives. It was a really tough night for Brighton. And it's funny because I think they showed up basically being a little bit... And this goes both ways. I think they showed up being a little bit confident, which can be a good thing. You know, we're not going to play our normal way. We're going to, you know, we're going to play Rincela Babajide. We're going to play Ellie Brazil as a false nine. We're going to let Kagman have more of the ball. We're going to play Katie Robinson like a youth team player, England 18 player. We're going to play her. And you could tell Hope Powell kind of had taken the leash off her players. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't work. And tonight, it didn't work. They were hectic, they were loose, they were poor in possession. In some ways, they created a lot of chances because they were so... there was no midfield at all. They were pushed so far up. Like I said, these four players, Kagman especially, was not there to retain the ball, was not there to slow down the play. She was there to, you know, try and... spring Katie Robinson, spring Ellie Brazil, spraying passes. And I think, you know, that's one way of trying to beat, quote unquote, a lesser team. Another team maybe would have tried to hold on to possession and unpick Charlton slowly, but Brighton just tried to go down their gut. And I think what that did was actually open a lot of space up for Charlton. And Charlton were really unlucky not to be leading at half time. And then in the second half, she brings off Emma Koivisto off the bench. She goes from a back three to a back four. She brings off Victoria Williams, who's had an absolutely fantastic game. It was funny, you know, I think it's a credit to Hope Powell that she brought on two defenders, Victoria Williams and Emma Koivisto, and it actually made them attack much better because it settled their team. It settled their rhythm in possession. And then Fliss Gibbons scores an absolutely fantastic goal on the half volley, and Brighton get the 1-0. But I think Charlton will see this as an opportunity missed, and I think it's a sign of what they've done there with going fully professional, what Karen Hills is able to do. And I think maybe we might see Charlton challenge in the Championship this year. But I think the experiment maybe Hope Powell wanted to see from players like Rincela Babajide, Katie Robinson, Ellie Brazil as you know, attacking responsibility players in this team, it didn't work.
That's a pretty good analysis. Little stat that I've just seen on the BBC website, which is very fun for Brighton fans. Brighton have reached their first Women's FA Cup semi-final since the 1975-76 season, which is really exciting.
That was a great season.
I'm sure you remember it well. Koivisto Senior, I think, was playing. And I hope the fans come out for it. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that West Ham reached the cup final at Wembley, and that was such a big moment for the club and for a lot of those players. Like, even though they obviously lost the final, it was a huge moment for them. And that FA Cup semi-final penalty shootout win, I think it was against Reading, was, you know, one of the biggest moments in a lot of those players' careers. And I think maybe sometimes we forget that because we're so focused on, like, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, who's going to win it. But actually, for players from Brighton, this is a huge opportunity for their careers. I mean, imagine if they can pull off a win against Arsenal, get to Wembley for the final. It'd be huge.
Well, and like you said, Arsenal can have a lot of football. Obviously, they've got the momentum, they've got the quality, no doubt. But, you know, they're playing Barcelona next Tuesday. They've got an eye on the title. I think by the time these games come around, maybe it'll be the right time for Brighton to... cause the upset. Obviously, Danielle Carter will be the one to watch for the narrative if she could pull off an upset former club. I think, you know, Brighton obviously came off a poor result at the weekend. We didn't really get into that, but I think that's a sign of what Carla Ward can do when all her players are believing and clicking. And I think Brighton, on a good day, like I said, they're much more organised than they were today. They're much more safe, flawless. They're kind of doing everything right. Today, I think Hope Powell got experimental. It didn't work. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the second half. I obviously believe in Brighton, but they're going to need to be at their best to beat Arsenal.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
On the subject of fans, this is my segue.
Okay.
Really, really great to hear the fans at St Andrews tonight. Birmingham 0, Chelsea 3, but I think it was Chelsea away fans. Did you hear that, Flo, on the broadcast?
I have to say, I had it on mute No offense to no offense to whoever was doing the commentary and to the brilliant Chelsea away support, but yeah, I did have it on mute. But the pitch looked lovely.
I'm under the impression it was the Chelsea away fans, and if you're out there, if you're listening, you're probably not. Credit to you. It was a really, really good game to listen to.
I think
to.
they've been really loud all season, to be honest. They were really, really, really good voice at the opener at the Emirates. They were pretty decent in that home game against Everton, although I would have expected maybe a bit of a bigger crowd, but there was about 2,000-ish in there and they were loud. Very loud at Manchester United and yeah, great atmosphere. I think... So what's quite interesting about both the other ties, so the Birmingham-Chelsea and Manchester City-Leicester City, is kind of similar vibes. Two first halves where nothing really happened. I would say first half City game was extremely dull. First half of the Chelsea game was a bit more action. Beth England absolutely skied a penalty into space. Contender for the Houston Dash Orlando Pride space race, because I don't know where that ball is right now, but it's drifting somewhere among the planets. Terrible penalty in the first half. And there was just a lot of... I mean, Chelsea had a ton of possession. I couldn't find any stats for this game on, you know, the usual kind of like Google stats, but they had so much of the ball, but they just weren't really doing anything with it. They needed someone to kind of really take the game by the scruff of the neck and put some decent supply into Beth England. She didn't get a lot of supply when she was on the pitch. A lot of people kind of taking pot shots from outside the box, and it was clear it was a kind of a group that don't play a lot together. You know, Drew Spence started the game. She sort of kept getting in Beth England's way. Erin Cuthbert is back after her head injury away with Scotland, and she was trying to do her usual kind of Erin Cuthbertness, but wasn't getting much action when she tried to cut inside or go around the outside of her defender. It just wasn't quite happening. And Birmingham defended, you know, okay in the first half, to be honest. Like, oh, here we go. I found it on the BBC now. 77% possession is what Chelsea had.
Sounds about right.
21 yeah. shots. 21 shots, but only 8 on target. And I think, you know, most of those shots on target came in the second half. So, yeah, it just felt like as soon as Kirby and Harder came on, the game just transformed onto another level. The supply into Kerr for that first goal that kind of got them up and running was just so much better than what Beth England had got all night. I mean, it took to the 61st minute for Chelsea to make the breakthrough, and then it was kind of just like the floodgates opened.
It was a lovely header, that.
I thought, really good.
Special mensch. Obviously, Sam Kerr, you know, you all know how good she is, but it was another sign of an absolutely immaculate, emphatic header that only the best players can really do that, especially when it is 0-0. Maybe it's getting a little nervy out there. It was a real difference maker moment.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, in those sorts of games, you do just need that quality to shine through. And in the end, Chelsea made sure that it wasn't going to be like one of those nights. And that's important, really, because Birmingham offered very little, which is understandable because, you know, they knew that the game was going to be like that. They were going to have to grab any kind of opportunity on the break, and there were a few times where you thought, oh, they might get going, but I mean, they didn't manage one shot on target in the end, so it was pretty dire from them. But for 60 minutes they were probably, you know, pretty impressed, and they managed to keep them out. But yeah, that quality shines through. Chelsea are playing Man City for what I think Tom Gary has said is the 6th or 7th time in a cup final. More than 7 seasons together at the top, and they've still not met in a cup final. In FA Cup final. So there you go.
Flo, in our
it's brutal out here.
Moment of the week.
Is that become a regular segment now? we'll do a jingle.
Okay. Legally. Birmingham, you know, in some ways losing 3-0 to Chelsea in the cup. Oh, maybe it's a positive result. Mark Skinner is going to be going back to Birmingham this weekend. They're going to be welcoming Manchester United. I'm tying a little bit WSL, a little bit FA Cup here. How much, just what you saw from the players, from the vibe, should Birmingham fans feel better after tonight about their kind of uphill battle to try and avoid relegation? Or will you be expecting a Manchester United win, and at that, a kind of low morale Manchester United battering of Birmingham? do you think Birmingham came away maybe, yeah, like I said, with any positives tonight?
No.
No, it is brutal out here.
I think, well, okay, maybe the positives are that they can keep themselves in games and then hope to nick something on the break. And they did that at times last season as well. But the longer this goes on, obviously the harder it gets because the belief just crumbles away. But I do think in portions today they really did defend well, though, because they kept Chelsea at bay. They limited them to shots outside the box. But at the same time, it's going to be so hard to do that every week. I can't imagine how demoralising it is to just know that every week it's just like backs against the wall. Yeah, I feel for them.
It's brutal out here.
Shout out Jesse JPH for continuing the Olivia Rodrigo good times with the joke of Leicester looking at Man City. Good for you, looking happy and healthy. Man City
there was some good ones.
Leicester.
You know what? There were some very good replies to that Olivia Rodrigo tweet.
We love you out there with your replies.
Thank you so much to everyone who sent in their jokes. We appreciate it.
Obviously, Man City ended up getting the 6-0 win, despite not being happy and healthy. A lot of injuries there, Flo. Listener, let us know if you thought Flo's tweet saying that watching Man City players get injured was more thrilling than watching them
which
score.
I've since deleted, and I will go on record now on the pod to say the reason I deleted it is because I didn't want it to seem like I was taking pleasure from seeing how many City players get injured. It was genuinely just quite dramatic. Like, I felt more invested in whether or not players were going to stay fit than the scoreline. Like, every single time a player went down, my heartbeat went up. It was, like, made me on edge. But I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't entertainment to me. It was just, like, very nerve-wracking.
City fans, we want to hear from you. So anyway,
don't
Flo,
me,
6-0
please.
Win. Bunny Shaw getting a hat-trick. You know we love to see that. It's one of the it's one of those moments where all the timeline comes together. You know what I mean? Bunny Shaw, everyone loves her. Obviously, it's been a bit of a point of contention. Ellen White maybe getting more minutes. Such a big signing, you know, top scorer in France. Here she is getting a hat-trick done. What was good for City tonight? And again, go back to this idea of momentum. What can they take into the WSL?
I think it was a very important win. It shows also that when they're a little bit patched together, they can still get it done. I think Leicester were very, very bad. They also had the same issue that City had with players not being eligible to play because of the fact that this is last season's competition, which has kind of been a bit of a stupid thing, to be honest, all week. I don't really understand why the FA have done this. And both Gareth Taylor and Jonathan Morgan have said that they were told at really late notice as well, which didn't help the situation. And I just, like, I get it, rules are rules. But at the same time, you know, this competition could have actually been completed last year and they decided to sort of eke it out a little bit more. So in that case, you kind of got to help the clubs out, I think. Like, if we were fresh at the start of the competition and we were replaying the rest of it, I might understand. But we're in the quarterfinals now and it just feels a little bit harsh, especially to a club like Leicester. So, yeah, both teams were a little bit screwed because of that. City couldn't have Kennedy and Mace play, so they had Alex Greenwood and Jill Scott as their centre-back partnership.
Jill the barista Scott.
Yeah, Jill the barista Scott. And you know what? She did a good job. She didn't have a lot of work to do, but I mean, considering she was filling in, she did a good job. Very dull first half. And then, yeah, that...
She didn't have a latte to do.
Very good. And then start of the second half, Bunny Shaw gets that goal and then it's kind of just like open season really. And I suppose it's similar to the Chelsea game as well because it's like that quality just eventually shines through. And there is that narrative I think we've spoken about before about City wasting opportunities sometimes. Obviously, we know they did that against Spurs and were punished. And we've seen that at times before. Start of last season, it happened as well. But it could have been like that tonight. But they turned it on at the right times. I think Bunny Shaw is really relentless as well, which I like about her. Her movement is constant. She never gives up, and I think she showed that tonight. Like, She creates her own luck. A lot of her finishes tonight weren't exactly immaculate, but like she's getting in the right areas, and if the ball bounces off her face and goes in the process, doesn't really matter. She's still scoring a goal. She's still getting you through to the semi-final, and that's what they need, really. And Vicky Lozada's goal was brilliant. Her goal was so, so good, and she went down afterwards and then eventually came off injured. Hopefully she's all right, because she's had a good start to the season with City, and you know, we don't want to see more injuries. Full disclaimer, I don't want to see more injuries. It's just like tense out there.
It's tense out there. Gosh, it's tense out there. Flo, how long is Gareth Taylor's leash in Manchester? Like, do we think, probably not in a FA Cup quarter final, he's gonna get sacked, but you know, how long can the poor start, you know, obviously the Real Madrid loss in Champions League is probably the worst of the season so far. Maybe the Arsenal won last weekend. But how, yeah, could we see Gareth Taylor lose his job in Manchester? What are the whispers saying? You know people.
Well, I don't really know anyone. Well, I mean, I could ask them, but it doesn't seem very fair. But I don't think they'd tell me anyway. The thing about Man City is they always want to hire from within, because they have their little philosophy, they have their sort of City group brand, so they've got to have someone really lined up. So would it be bring Nick Cushing back from the States? Gareth Taylor's assistant Alan Mahn, heard Leanne Sanderson saying on TalkSport that he's kind of the brains behind the whole operation and kind of does a lot of the sessions and stuff, and Gareth Taylor's kind of more the kind of philosopher, I guess, and more the management side rather than the coaching side. So would it be that Alan Mahn would get the role, because the players have already worked with him, they know him well? There are a few options. Or is it, you know, the clubs look at the situation and say, well, you've got a lot of injuries, when everyone's fully fit, you'll have a proper idea of the potential of this team, because they still could probably come away with at least one trophy this season, one of the FA Cups, and potentially a Conti Cup. But it isn't great, to be honest. I think the Champions League thing is not just a Gareth Taylor issue, but I personally, I'm not massively inspired by the guy, and I don't mean that in a super horrible way, but I just don't really know what the plan is. I think he's made some interesting decisions, even without these injuries, and I'm just kind of confused by it all, and I just don't know if starting from scratch would be the right thing to do, or you just kind of stick with it.
Are you getting deja vu?
Not really.
Not really. All right. On the lesser side of things, before we wrap
this
up.
Is that an Olivia Rodrigo song, is it? That's why I was like, "What? Where are you going with this?" Okay, sorry. But I'm not, for the record. I don't know.
Leicester City welcome Tottenham Hotspur at home this weekend. That seems like a massive game. Obviously, Spurs have had a very good start to the season, but they don't score a lot of goals. They're definitely beatable. Leicester, to be honest, we had a lot of high expectations for them, but they only really need to be better than Reading and Birmingham to probably stay up this year, and that doesn't look like a hard ask. So do you expect more from them this weekend and maybe their first point to the season?
Yeah. I've been so impressed with Aston Villa this season. They've really kind of like gone above my expectations. So now I've kind of almost like taken them out of the relegation equation.
The scrap.
Yeah, I'm like, right, okay, I think you're definitely going to be fine. Birmingham, I think, are just like nailed on. And I feel like every other team will know that. So essentially, Leicester have just got to pick up points against Birmingham, really, in order to survive. Because unless Birmingham can do a few smashing grabs, I just don't see them picking up a lot of points in games. They'll be able to pick up a point here and there, but like those winning games, I think it's going to be similar to, you know, Bristol City last season. And I think Reading will get into a rhythm. I really do. I think they've got quality there. They've got enough good players. I just don't think they've had enough time together yet. So I think Reading's time is coming. They had two hard fixtures to start the season. I expect a lot more of them against Spurs. They could have got a point in that game. They could have won the game as well. So I'm expecting more from them. I think Reading will be fine. But yeah, I think it's going to be tight between Leicester and Birmingham, because I have been a little bit disappointed with Leicester, and I think they'll be disappointed as well, because they would have liked to be in a better place than they are now.
All right, well, maybe that's the best place to wrap things up as we look ahead to a fantastic weekend of FAWSL coming up this weekend. Big, big things going on in the NWSL over in the United States as well. Very, very tight playoff race. Annoyingly, Brighton versus Chelsea, an absolutely marquee fixture, which Brighton won last year, is going to be on at 5:30 a.m. Central Time in the USA.
Yeah, not ideal, is it?
Oh, not ideal. Kind of answers on a postcard, please, FA. That feels like an absolute personal attack on me and the rest of the American Coivisto hive. But yet, we keep swimming. Flo, should I love you and leave you and say goodnight? Or is there anything else? Any more for any more?
No. We didn't really reach many conclusions in this podcast. Sorry, listener.
I mean, it's only October.
But, you know, we don't need to reach conclusions. No, we don't need to reach conclusions. But if you have an opinion on the future of Gareth Taylor, do let us know, because I'm kind of in two minds about it. And also the situation, if you think about it, sorry to go back to it, we're about to end the podcast, but also it's like they're already out of these competitions. So like, does it really get them very far by making a change? They're already out of the Champions League. They're kind of already out of the title race. So actually making a change, is that really going to change anything?
I'm a big believer in making changes in the off season, in the summer. Yeah. So it's definitely a no for me. And I think last year we saw a lot of turmoil and change mid-season. I don't expect that to necessarily continue this year, but we'll find out as it goes along. We'll speak to you when we speak to you. I can't say exactly when we'll be back recording, but go give us a review on a podcast app of choice if you're able to do that. We'd love to hear from you. It really helps us out. We're trying to build the family, build the community, get more Olivia Rodrigo references out there. And maybe one day we'll even be back in the same country. This has been Relatively Football FA Cup Women's Quarterfinal Special. It's a Wednesday night. Flo's got to go to bed. And that's about it.